We are so excited to announce that Curry is launching our very own podcast, CC Curry. CC Curry will cover all the areas within your industrial equipment dealership. Our hope is that each episode gets you thinking in different ways about how to reach your highest potential. And then, CC Curry. Let us know what's going on in your world and let us help. To get you excited, we've produced this teaser episode to give you an idea of the content that's to come, specifically for industrial equipment dealers and distributors just like you. Today's topic, service department profitability. In this episode, we share portions from a presentation that Robin gave to a group of generator dealers. You'll hear Robin share an overview of the Curry Financial Model, a 50-year proven model developed by Bob Curry for industrial equipment dealers and distributors worldwide. Then she'll take you on a deep dive into service department profitability, including how to allocate personnel, occupancy, and operating expenses according to Curry model. Lastly, Robin talks absorption and why it's an essential metric for your dealership in today's unsteady economy. Within this 30-minute episode, you'll walk away with over 10 formulas that you can use immediately within your dealership to increase service department profitability. We've created a free downloadable guide so that you can follow along with the examples of what Robin illustrates within this episode. Grab your copy by visiting currymanagement.com/100. Again, that's currymanagement.com/100. All right, let's get into it.
So this snapshot is the basic kind of low-level Curry model. This is kind of where it all started, where what we did was we traveled around and we gathered data from all of the most successful companies across industries. This particular model applies to the generator industry. There's a little bit of a discrepancy on whenever that we're going to talk about, but it applies to the forklift industry. Then I make some small incremental changes for other industries and mostly in the sales department. But this is the basic model for North America. We've created models on three different continents, and they are different, especially the Asian model. But this is the one that we use all over Mexico. We use it all over Canada. So this is a really long tried and tested model. And where we got these numbers is from the top performers. So in all our studies, we looked at the 90th percentile, maybe 85th percentile, depending on the industry. And we collected that data and we looked at it by department. And we found out who were the top performers, for example, in the parts department. And who were the parts, the top performers in the service department and so forth. And so we aggregated all that data. And by about the early 80s, we had created this basic model where the top performers are achieving this results. I'll give you a really quick rundown of how to read this if you don't. I think there are some people that know how to read it, so I'll just kind of do a drive-by, but if you need more information, just let me know. So the four departments across the top are generally what we see. We do have now battery, we have transportation departments, we have a lot of other departments that we're now using to expand the model, especially systems. That's a growing segment of what we're seeing. But for now, what we have is a sales department where we sell units. And in that sales department, we look at the gross profit dollars as the yield on which we are going to base models or budgets. You can say budget as another term that we use. So in that sales department, 100% gross profit dollars, we now take 50% for our people, 10% for our space, and 25% for occupancy expenses. So therefore, and if I'm going too fast, let me know, but we expect a net in the sales department of 15% of the gross profit dollars. On all the other departments, which we call after sales or aftermarket, I'm sure you all have similar models, we look at the revenue stream as our basis for the model or the budget instead of the gross profit. So on our revenue stream, we now have a specific expectation of what our costs and our gross profit dollars are supposed to be. At model. We don't just wait until we've achieved our gross profit and then base everything from there. We look to the top line. So in the service department, for example, if you look to the almost to the right, full right, We see 100% is the sales or revenue, we call it. 35% of that money comes out as cost of goods sold. For our model, which may be different from how you're managing or measuring your business, that 35% cost of goods sold is purely the cost of our labor or the wages of the people performing the labor or the technicians. So 35% is just the W-2 wages that we pay to our technician team. It's the only thing we put in there. So after that 35% comes out, we expect a gross profit of 65% of the revenue dollars in the service department to be retained. From there, we continue measuring against revenue, another 20% for personnel. And here's the argument, and it's even been among Kohler dealers. I'll spill the beans a little bit. Some of our Kohler dealers and distributors both have argued that we need 25% of service revenue to accommodate the personnel. Haven't changed the model yet, but we're in that debate. And I only change the model maybe every 5 to 10 years when there's been a critical change in the marketplace. So 20%, I'm still saying, is to your service personnel, which would include, I'm going to get into this in greater detail. This is just a summary, but that will include anybody who's not a technician, your overhead people, your service managers, your dispatchers, your service writers, anybody else in the service department that's not a technician. Also, I do ask that when dealers and distributors report to me, they do not include the technician benefits in the costs. Rather, they include them in the personnel number. So that 20% includes about 2% to technician benefits. Moving down, that 5% is occupancy. That's the space that's allocated to your service group in your property. That's all that is, 5% of the revenue that comes in through the service department. That last 10% is operating expenses only for the service department. So if you look at the total expenses for service, 35% of the revenue that comes in is allocated out for expenses. So the net profit we expect is 30%. And I don't need to go over all the other departments right now, as this is really a service focus, but the measurements are the same. There are some different budgets in there and different models, but we measure it in the same manner. The one thing I do want to let you know is the 10% on the G&A. So there's 5% that we allow for personnel. And those are people that serve the entire corporation. So it could be IT, if you have an IT team. Depends on how big your corporation is, but you're still going to have some overhead. You're still going to have bookkeepers, accounting. You're still going to have HR, people like that. And sometimes ownership salaries will go into that personnel for G&A. And that 5% is measured against the combined aftermarket revenues. And so are the occupancy and the operating. So now a full 10% is a cost center, 10% of the aftermarket revenues for the company. So that's how the model works. And there's a lot behind it, and there are much deeper metrics. And there's an expanded model. And there's enough of that that there's a two-day class you could take on this. But for now, I just want to focus on that service model and let you know more of what's going into the service model. So here's our top line. Again, this is kind of repeating what I said before, but now you have it in writing. And if you get hold of this PowerPoint, if you'd like it, you can have it to refer to. But the service department, 65% is our gross profit model. So the cost of goods is all of the technicians combined, all of their W-2 wages. Personnel expense, again, here are some of the additional things that people sometimes have questions about. Well, where do I measure 401k and where do I measure uniforms and things like that? Anything that has to do with paying your people as a benefit. Vehicles, maybe if they have a vehicle that they use, and that might go in as a benefit to the technician, and that might come into this category. So everybody's a little bit different in the way they measure it. 20% of the service revenue is personnel. And like I said, slow me down if you want me to. So occupancy is 5%. So hopefully you can read this okay. When you have a big dealership or distribution location, you do have certain spaces that are allocated to certain departments. So I'm not sure what everyone's using for formulas, but a lot of it is just based on a pure square footage calculation. So if your service department is taking up 30% of your total footprint on your property, then a lot of dealers or distributors will allocate that amount to the occupancy expense for that department. What goes into it? It's the bottom there. It's your anything to do with your property. Maintenance, repairs, a new roof, buying a building, renting a building. One of our wealth building strategies is that the owner of the company owns the building, but in a separate company, in real estate trust or some other investment type of company, so that you can now charge rent back to the distribution or the dealer company. And in that case, that 5% of your service department revenue and all of your other occupancy models all get rolled up, and now you have a basis for what kind of rent to charge the company. We recommend overcharging if possible, because it's a great wealth building strategy. If you have a captive tenant, especially one that's as profitable as an industrial equipment company, and you can kind of go over on your rent. So we do see a lot of companies come through that are really, really over on occupancy expenses. And once we ask the question, well, is this market rent? Do you own the building? What's the detail of the company? Then we decide whether or not we're going to be okay with it. And sometimes we're okay with double occupancy expense if the owner owns the building. So that's just kind of a little thing I'm throwing in there. A question? So operating expenses. Now, is this something that we could really talk about for a long time? 10% of your service department revenue is an operating expense. So people say, well, 10% is really low. It's very expensive to run a service department for a distribution or a dealer. So what we do look for is recovery. And I'm not sure what your focus is on recovery at your dealership, but this is huge. We have best practices meetings where we could spend 2-3 hours creating best practices to recover operating expenses and service. And this list is certainly not exhaustive, but it's an example. Every single expense in the service department is hopefully recoverable. So when we have that 10% left, that's the only allowance that we want to look at as not recoverable expenses. But we do have a model of recovery of 100% on vehicles, 200% on accessories, service shop supplies, and things like that. Parts department freight, we look for 150% recovery. So what we're trying to do, hopefully, is turn some of these expense categories into profit centers for us, especially on freight. Freight is out of control these days, and logistics. So we try to build that back as a profit center for the company. This is a really kind of complicated area. Are there any questions about recovery? Because we can talk about some strategies for that. So here are some examples I have on this last page. We add on to the work orders a $25 technology fee because we have tablets, applications that we've developed on our own. We have complicated dispatch systems, all of the systems that we've implemented. In order to be better at serving the customer, we have to recoup that expense. So that's a $25 per work order, for example. A lot of people are not charging any additional recovery items. And a lot of companies are so good at it that it's just shocking to see how well they do recovering way more than they've spent on their expense departments. So shop supplies is another area where, again, the difficulty is in how is the customer going to accept this? How are we going to bill it in a way that it doesn't look offensive to the customer, especially if we're not currently doing it? Do we list them all as separate items? Do we create a memo bill? How do we do it is really the most important thing. And what is the tolerance of the customers to accept any additional recovery billing? And so it's funny, this is kind of a little bit of a rabbit hole, but I often find that the people in our departments that are really on the front line, the technicians, the dispatchers, the service advisors, the parks people, those are the ones that really need to be prepared and scripted, so to say, as to what do we do with these the conflicts that are created sometimes when we have a customer that pushes back and says, I'm not paying that shop supplies fee. Take it off the bill. Or I'm not paying a $25 technology fee. So we need to, and this is, again, another half day we sometimes spend helping the companies that we work with write scripts, not just for the customer facing issues, but how do they roll out things like this to their own team? So if you go down to the third one, the van truck recovery as in fuel and travel billing, we find that there's a lot of people inside your companies that may be reluctant to bill these items. And I understand that. And they say, well, it's not ethical. It's gouging the customer. They already pay $160 an hour for service or whatever your industry's rates are. So getting this rolled out is really, really important. And if you're a medium to large company and you do the math on the recovery opportunity that you're missing because your people aren't on board with it, we could see numbers within a group. I'll run a group's recovery loss, and it could be $2, $3 million on a large group of dealers. You'd have to look at your own numbers. But when you calculate that number, and we have to decide as owners or as general managers or ops managers here, who gets to make that decision? Who gets to take that money off of a work order or off of a customer invoice in advance, anticipating that the customer won't pay it or will argue it back? So there's a certain amount of training and scripting and, quite honestly, some courage that goes into these operating expense recovery items. And it's a thing that you really have to roll out to your team in a way that you have to watch your own language, I guess. I've heard dealers say, we'll bill whatever we can get away with. And that's to me, I said, no. Now you sound like you are doing something unethical and you're expecting your people to do it. So how we roll this out in a professional, scripted manner really makes all the difference. And like I said, do the math. Do the math on what these expenses are for your company and for your service department. And just look at what your potential is to collect some of that money. Environmental fees are a lot easier because our people can be scripted to say, this is required by law, we have to do this. And a lot of times the customer will be perfectly okay with that. They're okay with the government making money, but not the dealership sometimes. And so this, again, the after hours fee, these are just examples where if I had all day, I would give you a dozen more or 20 more strategies to recover your operating expenses. I spent a lot of time on this slide because it's that important. And it also creates the attitude at your dealership that this is a professional, profitable, for-profit company. We're not out there just to survive and to make sure that we're still in business. We're looking to make a profit so that our business can grow, can hire more people, provide more opportunity to the community. On and on. See, I could script this all day long, but this is really an important element for you all to look at. And if you're already doing it, then I'm preaching to the choir. But even in dealers that I've worked with for 15 years, they're still not doing it. And they say, yeah, you've been telling me this for over a decade. I'm going to go do it. And then finally, they'll bite the bullet and do it. So here are a couple of other benchmarks. $20,000 per tech per month is a benchmark that recently was moved from 15 to 20 over the past few years. Post-COVID and in the kind of economical weirdness that we're experiencing right now, everybody's prices have gone up. So price increases have led to a revenue stream that's come in at 20, 30, 40, even more on our growth numbers. If we look at first quarter of this year or second quarter against second quarter of last year and the year before, I'm just seeing these tremendous growth opportunities. And so that's where moving that model has come from. About 10 years ago, we were at 12,000 a month per tech. About 4 or 5 years ago, we moved it to 15, and now it's at 20. And that's just what we're seeing. In parts, I know this isn't a parts meeting, but in the parts department, we've seen huge growth on revenue. But unfortunately, we have to examine our units. And this is also applies to service, because the revenue growth has not been because we've sold more parts. It's due to price increasing. And in the tire industry, it's been the same. I work with a large group that I was just with last week, and we had a lot more revenue, a lot of growth. But when I measured their units from 2021, 2022, and now, units are down. So that's something that's important to watch. And one way we can decide is, our business growing, or are we charging more and working with less customers? Is that we would run a descending sales list year over year. And again, if anybody's doing this, don't be offended. I'm preaching to the choir. I get that. But for the people that need to hear that, this is important. When we run the descending sales list, we may find that we have a service customer that hasn't bought anything or hasn't called us for any service this year. So that would be an opportunity to find out, are they going with an independent? Do they not realize they need service? Are they going with a competitor? So these are the questions that we would ask. So although we see growth and we see prosperity right now, and everybody's very profitable and our per hour rates are up, are we still measuring who's purchasing service from us? And what's their rate and what is their trend on that? So that's an important one to look at. In the middle, the technician to overhead ratio, again, can be somewhat of a moving target depending on your structures and if you have small branches or you're all in one building. But that means that for every 5 technicians, we have 1 overhead person. If I see a ratio of 3 to 1 or 2 to 1, I have to wonder, what are those people doing and what are the inefficiencies that are causing the need for that much overhead? Those overhead people have to fit into that 20% model. And I think that's been sort of the argument in this industry, is that there's more overhead required for the technicians than in other industries. I'm not sure if I buy that. I don't like to be confrontational, but I have to keep exploring and finding out if that's really true, or if we have more efficiencies that we need to work on. And in this industry, like we've just seen in that product demonstration, this industry is advanced. They have great technology, really, really smart, brilliant people that work in some of these companies. And I gotta believe that we can hit that ratio or better. So in a new model that we've been rolling out, we are seeing 10 to 1. And people say, well, how are they doing it? And these are large companies. And what they're doing is they're restructuring the way we've looked at service overhead, as opposed to a manager, a dispatcher, a service writer, maybe a customer service rep, somebody closing the work orders, and somebody invoicing, as opposed to this chain where the work goes from the customer to the invoice stage. We look at one person as that one interface for certain number of transactions for a group of 10 techs. So this group of 10 techs will have one person who we see it as a dispatcher because they're very good at multitasking. We may want to change their title from dispatcher. Maybe we want to keep it, but we have one person working this group of 10 techs for every transaction that comes in from start to finish. And as we've rolled that out, we're seeing less work falling through the cracks. We're seeing less disputed bills kind of sitting. We're also seeing WIP improve. So whatever issues you're having with your tech to overhead, we need more talented people doing the administration part. And that's what we found, that when these dealerships are hiring talented people at a higher price, higher wages, and wages are still going up, but we can have less of them and still hit our 20% over our 20% personnel model. So there's details that, like I said, I could go on for a long time. And I think if anybody's come to my service program, we really get into these in details. And the last one I'm going to mention today for some of these additional ones is your 50% count. So one of our models is, and this has been developed in the past just 10 years, is that 75% of your whole company, so if you have 100 people in your company, we want 75% of them to be revenue producers. So that means half of them are technicians, and then there's another 25% that are other revenue producers. They may be drivers, they may be parts people, they may be sales reps. I mean, you've all got those in your companies. But half of your people have to be technicians. And that's been a tough number, the way that the technician market has been for years and years. I'm hearing that it's getting a little bit easier. It's kind of easing out, maybe not. I'm hearing that the wages are starting to stop escalating the way they have been. Hopefully that's true also. But that 50% benchmark, it really works. So the Curry model isn't to really isolate one or two measures. If you want to focus on one in order to get there, that's great. But it all works together. So some companies will come in and say, we have 80% technicians, and our overhead to tech is really way, it's way lower than it should be. We don't have a lot of people as overhead in the service department. But then I'll go in and I'll look and I'll see that there's a whole bunch of opportunity that we're not hitting. So the budget or the benchmark or the model, whatever word you want to use, it's really meant as a right sizing. So this is what it should look like. So when I have a dealership or a distribution company that comes in and all the personnel numbers are way below model, and they're like, yeah, look, I cut my people and I'm not paying much. And I'm like, it's an opportunity that's lost. So like I said, it's the model is right sizing. When you look at the model as a whole, that's when everything works together. It's kind of like when the magic happens. And there's another benchmark. I didn't want to put it in because I didn't want to take up too much time, but I think I'm good. And it's the billing multiple. So when we're deciding on our door rate, one of the things we look at is what will the market bear? And we're seeing really, really good door rates out there. And if you're not charging what everyone else is charging and then some, then you're missing opportunity. But if we take the hourly wage for the technicians, so say you're paying your technicians $50 an hour, we want to go with at least 3.5 to 4 times on our door rate. So you're doing the math in your head, and I'm seeing that we're way over that. I'm seeing some companies at 4.5 to 5 times. Technician wage times 5 equals door rate. Model is still 3.5 because I'm not ready to change it because I'm not sure where the economy is going. But for now, what I'm just telling you what I'm seeing in the marketplace, big, big multiple against the wage and the door rate. So that's just something for us to think about. So here are some of my technician productivity formulas. I know Sheena had said 3 important formulas, so I'm giving you like 20 here, but I want you to have a lot of information so that, you know, you can kind of pick and choose what you want to look at. But these 3 measures, this is how we measure technician performance and productivity. So the application is first, and any applied hours are hours, in our definition, that the technician is working on something that can be billed to a customer. So that needs to be at least 85%. 15% is not billable. The technician is sick or on vacation or at training or jury duty or having a baby or who knows what. But 15% is not billable and 85% is. Simple definition from my end for applied hours. But now when you go into the middle and you look at the efficiency, are we correctly billing all of the hours that are applied? So are we billing every single one of those applied hours? And what we find is there's discounting, there's improper clocking, there are rework, there are multiple visits, there's a lot of WIP. And these are things that erode the efficiency number. But on the good news is I'm seeing 120%, 130% from a lot of companies. And the way they achieve that is rounding up to the nearest half hour. I even have some companies that say we either bill a half day or a whole day. Small jobs like yours, you can't really do that, I'm sure, but rounding up is a good start. Quoted jobs, that's another way that we can really effectively hit more than 100% efficiency. If we think a job is going to be 2 hours and we quote three and the technician is told, here's a job, here's where it is, you have 2 hours to complete this job, he goes and does it, then that's called a pickup hour. So one of our goals in 2020 and 21 were one pickup hour per day per technician. And let's see where that goes. And as we tortured everybody with this, when we get something in our head here, we torture people. And as we went through that year and a half of just hammering dealers and distributors with it, we found that that number was growing and that number was starting to hit that critical number of 100 and then some. And now some dealerships, that's all they're doing is they're just quoting everything and they're beating the quote. And there's a lot of nuances to this. And again, it requires some scripting on the internal side where we don't necessarily tell the technician, well, it's 2 o'clock and we've already billed 7 hours for you, so work another hour and go home. It's not really how it works. And again, we have to look at what's our tolerance for that kind of management. But I'm just kind of letting you know what I'm seeing in the field across industries. And then that last one is 85% of the hours billed and the hours paid relationship. And productivity is really, really important. But to me, if you picked one of these, pick right there in the middle and make sure that we're hitting 100% efficiency on all those applied hours. I would be remiss if I did not make a big deal about absorption. And I'm talking about absorption because it's one of my critical risk management indicators. And I don't know if the economy is going to go into as bad of a recession as we thought. I'm feeling a lot more optimistic. I think we're going to see the worst of it in the next 2 quarters. I think that's going to be it. I've seen enough of these to kind of get a feel for how it goes. If the economy crashes, don't come after me. It wasn't my fault. But I'm just seeing it as a little bit softer. And I think that some of the other indicators are showing the same thing. But absorption gets us through any type of downturn. We've had pandemic. We've got a war going on. We've had political issues. Now we have the inflation and we have interest rates are rising. And the economy's a little bit stressed right now. And I think we're going to be okay. And I know we're going to be okay. But absorption is one of my risk factors to get us through. And when your dealership is fully absorbed, there may not be new sales of equipment that may drop off, but you're always going to have the service component. And people are going to be most likely going to repair or rent their units as opposed to buying new units during a down cycle in the economy. This is my formula. All of the aftermarket departments, gross profit dollars, have to absorb all of the company expenses. And I put 100% plus up there because we want more than 100% absorption. So again, that's a big risk factor. Here at Curry, over the past year or two after the pandemic, I developed a piece where I pulled 8 KPIs out of the Curry model as risk factors. And this is second on the top of the list. So it's our second most important risk factor to look at. And I can't stress enough how important it is. Some companies will look at absorption a little bit different. Some of the manufacturers measure it a little bit differently. So whatever method works for you, it's good, but it's a number that we cannot ever take our eyes off.
We hope that you've enjoyed this teaser episode. If you or someone within your dealership is interested in learning more about Curry service profitability, visit currymanagement.com/100, where you can find more information about our upcoming in-person 2-day service profitability program. Lastly, if you're as excited as we are about our CC Curry podcast launch, please subscribe by visiting currymanagement.com/100. Thanks for listening. We'll talk soon. And don't forget to CC Curry.